Hello, everybody, and welcome to 2013. This is a brand new year, brand new, lack of better words, brand new start for a lot of people. And that includes us here at Skewed and Reviewed. We're going to start off the January 2013 Skewedcast with a look at some hardware as well as some hot games. And we're going to talk about all the brand new revelations in the world of Star Wars. Joining me from our Arizona office and host AVP is Justin. Say hi, Justin.
How's it going?
Hey. And from our Seattle office is Joseph. Joseph, how are you doing?
Pretty good.
There you go. We made it. We're all surviving the snow, as Justin will tell you down here in Arizona. It's unseasonably cold. Not good, but you guys up in Washington are laughing at us because we get used to the warm weather down here. So, yeah, terrible. Anyway, so starting off, we're going to take a look about some technology. Now, as you guys know, for those of you that are new to the show, welcome. My name is Gareth. I'm the creator of Skewed and Reviewed, which is the website Skewed and Reviewed, the beta site SkewedNet, as well as Skewed and Reviewed, the magazine. And you can also catch me on syndicated BJ Shea Morning Experience and Geek Nation on KSW.com out of Seattle, which you can listen to online through your smartphone apps or for live streaming on KSW.com. So, as you guys have heard me talking, we've had some issues with Windows 8, many issues that Microsoft themselves have not been able to figure out. They remote access in, they work on everything, problems happen. We went back to 7, they tried to set us up as a dual boot, still have issues, so currently we're running on 7. Well, at one point there was some concern that maybe some hard drive data, even though it was backed up, might have been compromised. And so I'm really, really, really happy about this one product here from Newer Technology. They have the Voyager S3 USB 3.0 drive docking solution. Now what this is, it's a very sturdy and handsomely packaged cradle, and you plug it in through a USB port and you sit it on your desk. Now you can either remote access the hard drive through direct connection, or you can physically remove the hard drive, plug it into the cradle. Now what it does is it will take up to 4 terabytes of data from any 2.5 or 3.5 SATA drive, back it all up right there. So if you have a hard drive, it's showing signs of problems. You take this device, take the hard drive out, put it in here, boom, instantly sucks down the data. You can put in a new hard drive, bang, load it right back up, instant backup right there. And best of all, you can get it for about $75 or less for most retailers. I'm telling you, hard drives are one of those things that you never think about and you never worry about until they go out. And then you realize, oh my God, I've just lost all these games, all this productivity, photos, everything like that. And definitely, I mean, recommend it enough. You definitely want to get your books into that. Now, let's talk about gaming. That's one of our big features, one of our big things. We were at the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas a few weeks ago, and I came across this company that, honestly, I had not heard a lot about before. And they're called Genius, and they make a professional gaming mouse called the GX Gaming Gila. And this is a very attractive mouse. It's very solid, very sturdily designed. It's got the LED lights and everything. But let me read off some of these specs for you folks. 12-button mouse. Works perfect for MMOs and RTS games. Overclocking 200 DPI to 8200 DPI. What's that mean? It means so precise that if you so much as twitch your finger, it's going to know it if you want it that high. It uses a Scorpion user interface. It's up to 72 keys for user-defined macros, so you can really set up your custom configurations. 16 million RGB backlight systems in 3 areas. Very simple. You can set up your lighting and customs configurations. It is not wireless, but for those that need plenty of space, 1.8 meters of braided cable, nearly 6 feet, folks, with gold-plated USB connector. You have, and here's the thing that I really like. This reminds me a lot of the Mad Cats that we saw from previous years. It has adjustable metal weights. Now, one of the Corsair ones also talked about this as well. 4.5 grams times 6 with a storage case included, so you can weight it just the way you want it. And of course, you've got a rubber finish grip for complete control and handling. One of the great things about it is that it's very comfortable and it's ambidextrous, so you can use it with either your right or left hand, whatever your dominant hand is, customized any way that you want it. Now, if you're one of those people that want to just plug and go, you can certainly do that. The great thing about it is, as you're using it, if you can say, you know, a little too sensitive, not sensitive enough, wish it was lighter, wish it was heavier, you can check that out, and it works fantastic, especially with StarCraft II, which I am playing beta for the next StarCraft II release. It came in extremely handy, and I cut down my reaction time on custom group and that sort of thing considerably. So I'm looking at this plays out going forward. About, in one of the radio show, we talked about the Roxio HD game capture device. And another one that's on the market we want to talk about is the Diamond USB 1080i full HD game console video capture devices. It runs for about $133 and it offers HD recording in full 1080i. It works with the Xbox 360s, PS3, and PC, so it's literally the only thing you're going to need. And it has got an easy USB 2.0 interface. One of the great things about it is that you can record your high quality video and sound with a 2.0 USB audio interface, no delays at all. You got picture-in-picture video playback as an option, and you have easy uploads to YouTube and Facebook. It also is compatible with Windows XP, Vista 7. Used it on Windows 4, did not have a problem with that, and it also comes with its own video capture software. So what's this thing? Well, traditionally, if you want to shoot a game, one of the things that we have to do is to put up a flip cam on a tripod. You have to angle it so you don't get the glare, and then you get to play that fun game of, am I too close, am I too far away? You know, take the pictures of everything, get it up, then you load it up to the YouTube, to edit the software, load it up. It's a complicated situation. It's why we don't use more, don't put as much game video up there as we like. Or if you do rush it up, it looks kind of rough. Well, this way, you can plug the thing into your gaming console or PC through easy USB connection. You play your game, you record what you want, you see, easily edit the software with the software they included, easy edit video, and then straight up to YouTube, Facebook, brilliant HD, sound and color. It's fantastic, and it works exceptionally well. Very reliable, very solid, very durable unit, and I'm really impressed with that, so I'm definitely getting a lot of use out of that one. Now, one more piece of hardware before we get to the games, and this one is something that another company that I have not heard too much about, but Minix has a very nice gaming mouse called an NEOS82. And this is a very highly ranked gaming mouse. Now, it offers a truly metric design. It's got a solid grip, but the key to it is it has a lightning-fast processor. 8200 DPI sensitivity, laser sensor, and 128 kilobytes of built-in memory. Now, of course, there's also a customizable LED lighting system. But one of the great things about it is, now, I do want to caution folks, if you get this, when you get it, make sure you go to the website and get the latest patch, because sometimes if you don't do this, we've heard reports of people having some problems with it. It's got a surface quality analyzer tool. So what it basically will do is it'll read the surface that you're trying to use it on to adjust its performance accordingly to give you the best possible reactions for that surface. Now, one of the great things about it is you don't need a lot of messing around with it. There are a lot of these highly customizable mice out there. And while I certainly like the features, I definitely am one of those people that I think sometimes there can be some overkill. I like a mouse that I can pretty much plug in and get playing. The only real customization I want to have to deal with is assigning which keys to which buttons on the mouse. But if you want additional features, like say, I want my lights to go this way, I would for this much sensitivity. You can do that easily with that. It's a very, very pleasant surprise with that. Like I said, it's always nice to get you've not heard a lot about, and you get a chance to try, and it worked very well. It fits very comfortably. The buttons are very configurations, and it was very comfortable, and it's held up very durably. So we sent it off for some testing with the Brutal tester. My sister is now doing a test on it. She picked up a brand new mouse from another company, and it destroyed. It was destroyed within a day. So she if there's a flaw with the design, she finds it. So she's putting it through the paces. I couldn't find anything wrong with it. So looking forward to seeing how this one, meets her stress test. So guys, that is the hardware portion of the show. So we can start off with some gaming, and there's definitely been a lot of old and new out there. And we got Natural Selection 2 up first, so take it away.
So Natural Selection 2, obviously it's a lot like Natural Selection 1. If you've ever played that, it's a really, really popular Half-Life 1 mod. And I've been following, or had been following, Natural Selection 2's development for quite some time. It was in development for close to 7 years, maybe longer. And really, it has kind of an amazing development story. It's really just interesting just to, read up on that if you ever have time. Just because it's made by just a handful of guys, as far as I know, and there were several times that they basically had no money, and they stopped developing it completely and had to shelve it until they, found the funds to continue on. But just through sheer determination, they got it out there. But it's an excellent game. If you don't know the concept of Natural Selection, it's aliens versus marines. So immediately I was drawn to it because it reminds me a lot of Alien vs. Predator 2, which is hands down one of my favorite games ever. And it incorporates RTS elements. There's a commander on both sides, and it is absolutely essential for both teams to have a good commander. Commander oversees the battle from bird's eye view, like any RTS game. To build buildings, give orders to the players, and has to use pretty much the same tactics that you would have to use in a StarCraft game. All the while, you're working with your team, so all your units are players. So it's an interesting little play between like hardcore RTS, like something you'd see in StarCraft, and something you'd see in a more competitive first-person shooter. All the mechanics are great. It is a visually stunning game. It's pretty well balanced. They're still working on making it balanced. They're regularly adding patches, making things more balanced, tweaking things, adding new maps, new weapons. So it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, and one of the things that I liked about it is it's one of those things that if you are not a direct fan or a regular user of Natural Selection, you can jump right into it and enjoy it without having played Natural Selection. Now, of course, it's going to increase your desire to do so, but it's fun. Not only does it blend genres extremely well, the control system on it is highly customizable, it looks good, it's a lot of fun, and I remember the first time I played it, I was in there playing one of the creatures, and of course for me, it's always tricky until I learn a map. I mean, anybody who's ever played Call of Duty or any shooter with me knows, until I kind of get an idea of my way around the map, it's pretty scary because you are getting picked off like crazy. And I just love the idea of being able to pounce and bite and claw and tear into the people, and it was fun. That was the thing. Even though I had no idea what I was doing, even though I didn't know the map, just running around and just enjoying the camera angles as I moved around. And then all of a sudden, hey, I found somebody. Okay, he shot me, but I got a couple good licks on him. And then the first time you actually take someone out, it was great. And the great thing about this, it's readily accessible on Steam. So if you have a PC and you game, the odds are got Steam, and it's not, you know, they don't charge $60 for it either, which is a really nice.
Oh yeah, definitely. And there's also if you know any coding, they release the entire source code of the game with the game itself, so it is completely moddable. Even if you just go on Steam and look at its Steam Workshop, there's tons of stuff that people are adding all the time. It is completely open for people. If that's something that you can do, it's completely open for you to mod the game however you want it.
That's awesome. Now, Joseph, you're going to tell us about Assassin's Creed 3, and you've definitely, you know, my experience with the game, I got to say, I'm playing the storyline, and I'm absolutely captivated by it. There's some expansions, like the Benedict Arnold expansion. There's another one that just came out. But I've really been enjoying the multiplayer aspect of it. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, this is the first in the series to offer multiplayer. And one of the modes that they do is you go online with your character. I'm playing the PC version of it. And you get put into a map, and they essentially say, you're out there and there's other assassins. And they flash up a picture of the person that you're supposed to get. So you have to go through all this crowd of other gamers and NPC people, find the person, and take them out. Well, the problem is, while you're doing that, there's also somebody that's given the assignment to take you out. So you're hunting and at the same time being defensive. And I found myself hiding in, you know, haylofts, jumping at shadows, taking people out, only to find I killed an innocent person. And just when you think, I've got this all figured out, you know, it's this person, then they jump out and attack you, fend that off, and you take them out. It, you know, it's just such a crutch concept on it. But, you know, for the most people, it's going to be the solo play and the storyline that draws them in initially. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, yeah, that's exactly what drew me into it, too. I've been a big fan of the series for a while, and I got to say, though, the last entry kind of bored me. So when they announced this game and talked about it being set in America, I was excited. And I got to say, it is immense how big this game is. I've been playing on the PlayStation 3, which unfortunately doesn't have quite the edge that the PC version has with updated, you know, hardware and everything. But the graphics on the PlayStation 3, you wouldn't know you're playing on a six-year-old system when you're playing this game. They're just that good. The storyline missions, they follow their usual pattern, gathering information, stalking, and, you know, you eventually kill a high-profile target. But it's the stuff that's outside the storyline that really makes the game very attractive to a lot of people. From hunting for trinkets through the city, you clamoring over rooftops in New York to get almanac pages, or, you know, picking fights with the redcoats and everything like that on behalf of the populace. The biggest portion of the game I really enjoy now, too, is they've added the ship element, getting out on the seas and battling there. And that's just such a fun, new, exciting mechanic for the game, and it's definitely bringing a lot of people into it. The fighting mechanisms are much easier to use. The game opens up greatly by going in through an opera house in London, and it kind of shows the transition from Europe to the US, and they've thrown in some good twists in the storyline, things that you didn't really expect to see coming. And the other portion is being able to play as Desmond outside of the Animus and doing some of these assassin maneuvers, mostly just the parkour stuff, but it definitely shows a good future for the game outside of the Animus as well.
Yeah, that's what got me, because I'll be honest, my sister, huge fan of the series, and obviously I was aware of it. Obviously, I'd seen it, played a little bit of it, but I hadn't really got into the previous chapters. So when we got set up to review this one, gotta say I was blown away by it. My first thought was, anybody that knows me, Jen can absolutely tell you, when we play games like Super Mario Brothers on the Wii U, I hate time jumps. I hate precision thing. It drives me up the wall where you have to sit there and like do precise leaps and everything. Anybody that played some of the Star Wars games like Jedi Academy and stuff, you remember that one mission where you had to jump from rooftop, or drives me up the wall. Nothing takes me out of the action more than having to say, oh God, I got to keep doing this precise jump over and over. And if I fall, it's all done. And there you go. That's, you know, some of the earlier God of War games used to drive me up the wall as well. And so one of my concerns was, oh boy, am I going to be on the keyboard having to do all these different key combinations of the mouse to do precise jumps, timing, combat moves? Is this thing going to have a ridiculously high learning curve? And it was amazing to me how quickly I got in there and how, you know, fast I was able to do solid combat moves, how engrossing the story was graphically. It's like, wow. And, you know, there are times you got to catch yourself and say, I've got something to do. I don't need to be taken in the scene.
Right. And I think what's really good about this one, too, is obviously we're playing as a new character. We're coming to America, so Ezio is not really part of the story anymore. But it explains how this new character becomes who he is and what his role in the whole thing is. So I think they did a good job with that as well.
Right. And they create a full world. It's not just here's a rail, go from point A to point B, kill point C. You have a good snapshot of what the world was like at that time. And there are very interesting NPC characters to interact with. And it's not just killing everybody you come across.
Right.
So, speaking of killing everybody you come across, though, I have two that are definitely going to be highlights on this. Now, Justin and I used to play Rage. He helped me out when it glitched, too, with helping to restore a save game all those years ago, and we used to get in and do some of the combat racing together. And so you can imagine my surprise when over a year after the game came out, we got updated that a official add-on pack for the game. Now, it's very interesting to be clear on this. Most of the time when you get new maps and new so on and so forth, they refer to it as downloadable content or DLC. This is referred to as an add-on pack. And for those of you that remember the classic days of PC gaming, it wasn't uncommon for a game to have an expansion pack of $19.99 to $29.99 to tide you over until Part 2 came out. Well, in Rage, that's called the Scorchers, what you do is you battle an all-new maniacal bandit clan, and obviously they're called the Scorchers, and with a name like that, you can bet fire, you know, Beavis is in the background, fire, fire, fire. You could bet that that's a big element of it. And one of the things is that you get to go and explore some new areas. Obviously, you fight alongside new allies and new weapons and that sort of thing. And of course, like any adventure game, the standard thing is to get behind, figure out what their agenda is, save the day, you know, so on and so forth. It includes a feature called Ultra Nightmare, which is an all-new high difficulty mode. Honestly, I tried that, and you'll be cursing up a blue streak in 30 seconds. It is that difficult. There's an extended play option that allows you to play past the original ending of the game. And so I'll leave it at that, because that was one of the biggest criticisms we had of the game as it just ended. I was gearing up expecting this big boss fight. You do something and it just ended. And I'm like, okay, well, where's Rage 2? Still waiting for Rage 2, but at least now you have a little more to it. And it also gives you the opportunity to finish collecting items and achievements. One of the great things about it is it is very reasonably priced, and you can get it for the Xbox 360, for the PC, and for the PlayStation 3. Now, one of the things that I love is they have this weapon that anybody who's played the game knows the crafting and elements to it. Imagine something which is basically a high-tension hand crank with a rebar stick in the middle of it, that it takes a while to load, but you fire that thing and anything in its path, think of the steak gun, painkiller, or perhaps a rail gun, that you hit someone with this and they're going to stay down. And so that was one of my very happy moments, even though it took forever to reload, was being able to draw down on somebody and just bang, shoot a stick of rebar at them, high tension, and watch them stick to the wall. And, you know, if you decided to do anything more to them, but you could. And the flame weapons were very good. Now, I think it was a wonderful new chapter. I'd been looking for it, and, this was another one of those things that I wasn't expecting. This one kind of slipped in under the radar for me. I was hoping someday to hear an announcement of Rage 2, and this came out, and it's like, you know, wow, this is the add-on that really enhanced the game. And I hope someday, I'm sure they probably may consider it. One, giving us new add-on. Two, doing a sequel. But if nothing else, repackage the game and put it out with the two of them together. Solid combination. And I do recommend getting that. You can pick that up on Steam as well. Another game that I wanted to talk about, and I'm having so much fun with this. There's two I'm just really enjoying, is Far Cry 3. And this is from Ubisoft. Doesn't have anything in common with the first two in terms of characters and storylines. And what you do is you play a character who, while on a expedition with your friends, a vacation as it were, skydive and end up on this island, and you get taken prisoner by this vicious drug and bandit gang. Now, you manage to escape with someone, he's killed in the process, and there you are with next to no combat training out in the hostile jungle environment. And you have to battle to save your not only yourself, but rescue your friends. The game incorporates many of the aspects that made the original Far Cry so good. You have a very lush jungle atmosphere, very large ecosystem. There are things like wild dogs. There are things like boars. There are things like pigs. There are things like tigers that if you go too far in the jungle, they will attack you. Now, you can defeat them. Skin them, harvest the meat, use that for trade. There are plant extracts throughout the gigantic map. The map is so big, in many cases, you have to use a vehicle to get to and from places. Things like cars, hang gliders, quad bikes, that sort of thing. There were boats. It's, you know, just amazing how beautiful the graphics are in this. You can run people over with the vehicles. You can push them into the woods and let some of the wildlife. One of the things I did recently was shoot a cage, which freed a tiger, which allowed them to absolutely maul a couple guys that were coming down on me. You have your knife weapon as your standard melee weapon, but you have everything from, you can have a shotgun, you can have a pistol, you can have an AK-47 and various weaponry. You're not a one-man army in this carrying tons of weapons. Standard is two weapons and your knife. And one of the great things about it is you have to, you know, really put some strategy to this. You can't just go in guns blazing. There are some, you know, I guess supernatural or otherworldly, medicinally motivated segments, shall we say, that brought to mind some of the nightmare segments from Max Payne and not Max Payne 2, Fear, where you're kind of in an other world segment where you learn about the mystery. Very solid adult content. There's an auto map where if you've gone to a place, you could rapid travel to it. There's tons of side quests. There's crafting, such as, like I said, making your antidotes, making healing potions. There are like radio towers that you can take over and knock out to increase the number of things that you can get in terms of the more radio towers you take out, the better weaponry you can get. You have to create like wallets, backpacks, storage, things like that. Absolutely love the game. Fascinated by the storyline. The villain is absolutely amazing. And it's a fantastic experience. Now, the multiplayer has been very solid. It offers a split-screen multiplayer and co-op. You have your standard death matches. You have that. I've had a couple of glitches with the multiplayer in that. A little bit of connectivity issues. Early on, those were resolved very quickly with the updates. You get in the game. Now, one of the things that I found a little tricky is that there were a couple times where we had some issues like bullet hit counting not going off, a little bit of lag. Those were resolved. One of the things that I found a little frustrating was that it has kind of this weird thing. Once you get hit, it kind of goes to like shows you the path of the bullet that hits you. And you have to kind of do a fight for survival where you kind of are fighting, hitting a button essentially to try to stay alive till one of your teammates comes and revives you, or you can just die and come back. I'm kind of a run and gun, full on person where I'd much rather just be dead, hit the button, go right back in. That being said, the multiplayer is a lot of fun. There's definitely a lot of challenge to it. And it is the best multiplayer experience that I've had of any of the Far Cry games. So do recommend that highly. It is available for Xbox 360, PS3, and of course the PC, which is the version I'm playing now, and I'm just really enjoying it. And I believe there's some DLC scheduled to come out for that in the not too distant future. Now, one other game I wanted to talk about and wrap up with before we get on to the next segment of the show is Hitman Absolution. This is from Square Enix, and this is the latest in the, naturally, Hitman series. Now, I've seen the Hitman movie. I know I'm one of the few people that can probably say that. And I've seen some of the other Hitman games. I've played a little bit of them. And like I'd mentioned earlier, one of my concerns would be, was always that there's going to be a lot of learning curve here. There's lots of technique and, you know, stealth gaming. That kind of gets to me because I hate that sneaking around and avoid detection and all of that. I understand there's time and place for it, but I'm an action junkie first and foremost. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar, you play the infamous Agent 47, the, you know, bald-headed, greatly dressed, tattoo on the back of the head, master assassin. And in the game, of course, there are a lot of twists and turns and setups and conspiracies. One of the great things I love about it is just how easy I was able to get in and get taken in by the whole story. There's some very exotic locales like Chinatown and a library and a Chicago subway system. The combat in the game is easy to grab, very flowing. You have things like rod, you have knives, you have anything from mechanical weapons in terms of like shotguns, machine guns, pistols, to his customers. And to give you an idea, like some of the games, how you want it to be. And here's an example. One of the early missions had me sneaking into a compound to take out a target. Now, you get into the compound, you have a button that you can use to use your senses, which kind of helps you detect danger. I could choose to sneak past people or I could take them out. How I took them out was entirely up to me. Once I took them out, you can choose to hide the body or not hide the body. If you don't, the enemies can detect it, things happen. You can choose to take their clothing, in essence, use that as a guide, disguise to work your way. And this was all just great for me. And because I got into the thing, now, you know, as anybody would say, subtlety is not my strong point. And the garrote and the taking a wrench or a brick, you can take things like rocks and throw them in a direction to distract people. You can also do that in Far Cry 3 to sneak past them. Not my way of doing it. I just raged right in and started taking the people out. And I'm almost ashamed to admit that during several points, rather than certain stealth missions, I opted for direct confrontation with certain law enforcements in droves. They put 7 or 8 at me. I had a knife. I quickly solved the problem my way and did it. Now, this has, it gets you into the action. It's as violent as you want to make it, but, you know, I figure with a game like Hitman, subtlety and conversation is not my approach. I'm taking them out. But it has some very interesting twist of humor. It's got a very solid cast. You've got, like, Robert Carradine in it, several name Hollywood actors. I'm not going to name them now. That's part of the surprise, is that when you play it, you go, oh, wow, they're in it. Wow, they're in it. Several of the cutscenes were amazing. You truly felt like you were right in the middle of a Hollywood production. Larger-than-life action, explosions, plot twisting all over the place, great graphics, dynamic locations. And one of the things that I enjoyed was, like, the fun aspect of it. There was a certain point in the game where you end up in a gun shop, and in order to get an accomplishment done, they want you to, take out a top score. You have not kill them, but you have to be the person's top score. Well, early on, I got a little frustrated with it before I decided I found the secret was using your instinctual shooting, where you essentially slow things down, key point certain targets, and then you hit your button and it boom, 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 rapidly fires where you hit the arrows and stuff. You can kind of preset things, kind of like bullet time and Max Payne, that sort of thing. Well, I kind of got a little frustrated and I decided to just start shooting up the gun range. Anybody who's ever been to a gun range can imagine what happens. It doesn't matter how good a master assassin you are, when 27 good old boys start coming at you and more start coming in from the parking lot, I got about 15 of them before they got me. So game was very fair with the save system too. I kind of went in expecting a checkpoint save system, and a lot of times it would just move you on into the next phase of the story. So fantastic game, really enjoying that. Hitman, Absolution by Square Enix out right now for Xbox, 360, PS3, and the PC. All right, guys, so here we go. We're wrapping up the finale of the show tonight. Let's talk about the big news that came out. J.J. Abrams is going to be the guy handling the biggest debate in history, Star Trek or Star Wars, and he's going to be able to speak from experience from both sides of the plate. Joseph, starting with you, what is your reaction to the news?
You know, I still haven't made up my mind yet. I respect J.J. Abrams immensely. I think he did a great job with Star Trek. In fact, his portrayal of the new Star Trek movie actually got me interested in watching some of the older episodes. I've been a diehard Star Wars fan since I was 1 year old when my dad took me to see Return of the Jedi for the first time. So when I found out he was going to be directing, I was kind of excited, but at the same time, I don't want it to look like Star Trek, which is what I'm afraid might happen. But I'm still kind of giving my faith to him and hoping that it comes out and it really feels like part of the Star Wars universe. I'm still disappointed that we're not going to see the Thrawn trilogy as this set of movies, but it could be interesting with J.J. Abrams, especially if he has any input on the writing of the storylines.
Now, Justin, what is your take on the whole thing?
Actually, pretty much the exact same. I like J.J. Abrams a lot, and, you know, of all the directors that were being talked about, he was one of the ones that I thought would have been great. He's an absolutely fantastic director, and I have no doubt about his ability to direct a great Star Wars movie. But my only worry is pretty much exact same as Joseph there. J.J. Abrams is now known for his portrayal of Star Trek. Like, he did such a great job with Star Trek, and he's making the second one, still talking about doing a third one, or at least being involved in somewhat. And that's kind of become his thing. Like, I mean, he's done other movies as well, and he'll do other movies in the future, but, you know, kind of like how Peter Jackson's known for Lord of the Rings. J.J. Abrams now has Star Trek and Star Wars, and my only worry is that they'll both become muddled because they're done by the same person. They might look the exact same. But other than that, I mean, I think he's one of the best to direct it. I would have also liked to see maybe Joss Whedon or Guillermo del Toro would have been great too, but at the end of the day, I think it'll still be a great movie. It's just how they're going to do the story, how much say he has in the story, what kind of visual style they go with, that's basically going to be like the determining factor on all of this.
Yeah, and I think you guys just hit it exactly. I mean, I remember when the original Star Wars came out. Justin probably doesn't remember this theater. I think it's gone before you were born. But there used to be this big, massive theater in Phoenix called the Cine Capri. It was actually closer to Scottsdale. And it was this big, old-style show panel, kind of like the Cinerama in Seattle, the big curved screen. And that's where the Star Wars, that's where it played. That was the only place in Phoenix that could play. It was like a 600-700 seat theater. And I remember watching the movie and, you know, my God, nothing like that had ever been done. And I try to tell people, and people just don't understand, when those movies were out, they completely changed Hollywood. There had never been movie hype, anticipation, merchandising, marketing, anything like that. And it was 10 years everywhere you went, Star Wars story. And there has never been any movies, Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings, the Star Wars prequels, nothing that was as big a cultural impact as this film was that had the marketing. I mean, networks were going out of their way to do any kind of Star Wars tie-in. That's where we got that god-awful Star Wars holiday special that everyone has denounced. I mean, There were so many Star Wars knockoffs and everything coming. And I remember Lucas even saying that at the end of the process, it was 9-10 years where he said, I needed to step away. The prequels came out, and as I, you know, everyone, oh, the Phantom Menace sucks, this sucks. Well, it's kind of ironic how they, you know, made almost $1 billion worldwide. I'm sure there's plenty of studios and filmmakers that would love to have a failure of that proportion. Yeah. But anyway, that being said, I remembered something Abrams had said. He told people in an interview, he said, yeah, I'd been offered Star Wars. I turned it down because I grew up with Star Wars. It had an impact on me. It would be very difficult to go in there and take it over. I did not have that kind of connection with Star Trek. So it was easier for me to go into and say, okay, here I am. This is the way it's going to be done. There you go. But when you grow up with something, when you're a fan of something from your childhood, when the film influenced you, it's a very difficult task. And, you know, the more I think about it, we heard names like Matthew Vaughn, and that's why he left the X-Men sequel. And you mentioned a lot of directors. And, you know, I got to thinking about this when Abrams was announced, because this is truly a unique situation. We've not had, you know, two iconic franchises directed by the same person. Now, admittedly, he may only do one film. He may not do episodes 8 or 9 or something like that. But the point is, he's the one they trusted to kick off a new series. Steven Spielberg loves him. Lucas unanimously just said, absolutely, I've been really impressed with this guy. You know, people have called him the young Steven Spielberg, that sort of thing. And then, you know, we mentioned Star Trek. People forget as well that he also has done the last two Mission Impossible films, and he's committed to being involved in the next one. They talked to Paramount, and they said, how is this going to affect J.J. Abrams, you know, with future Star Trek? And they said he's already committed to it, at the very least, producing the next film. And we're hoping that he'll direct and do that and be involved in that as long as possible. And, you know, we have people saying, oh, God, I don't want lens flare, and I don't want the Rancor to be Cloverfield. And, you know, there'll be plenty of time for us to talk about what's the story going to be. You know, I think a big chunk of that has to do with the fact, will how many of the originals come back? Who's going to get casting? That'll all be figured out in the future. The fact is, they have the script that's out there. The guy who wrote Little Miss Sunshine, Toy Story 3, Academy Award, nominated writer is taking it. Kathleen Kennedy, who now heads Lucasfilm, knows what she's doing. They're putting very good, very bright people up there. My guess is it's going to be filmed in 3D. And they paid $4 billion here, $4.4 billion, folks. They know what's going on and they know the stakes. And I think they're going to work very hard to make it the best possible thing. But at the same time, I got to thinking about it, and, you know, as a fan, I'm thrilled to death that there's going to be new Star Wars stuff. And as Disney has pointed out, it's not just going to be the three new movies. They are also going to be doing standalone films down the road. You know, there's going to be more more things. ABC Television is looking at bringing live action TV to light finally, because since it's all going to be owned in-house, the $5 million plus an episode might be more feasible than having to work in a partnership with someone. They've talked about bringing the Clone Wars over to one of the Disney XD channels after its contract with Cartoon Network expires. They've talked about building a new animated show. There's, you know, possibly going to be new, well, not possibly, you can bet, there'll probably be more Disney attractions popping up at Disneyland and Disney World. But getting back to the film, I keep thinking about one interesting aspect. Despite the phenomenal box office of them, and I think a lot of it was very unjust, Lucas took an absolute beating from the fan base over the prequel trilogy. And, you know, it was interesting how people said, oh, I can't stand this, it sucked. How many times have you seen it? 15, and I'm going again next week. It's like, huh? And it was like first one in the internet age where the fans could have a voice. And I know that after 17 years, hyped to almost ridiculous levels, that Lucas himself even went out of his way to try to caution people before The Phantom Menace came out. These will be different. These are going to be a different look, a different tone. I'm not the same filmmaker now that I was then. Don't blow these things out of proportion. And I got to think about, you know, the films and Abrams and that sort of thing. And I can understand the difficulties. And, you know, here's a case in point. Lucasfilm have decided not to put out the 3D conversions of Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith as they originally had planned. First, they were coming out in February, March. Then they got put back to later in the year. Now they've come out and said they don't, they're not going to do those three versions at this time because their focus is on creating the new Star Wars films. Okay, very good. But I had people write me and say, you know, I'm really disappointed by that. I could really give a damn about the 3D conversions. I've never seen the original trilogy in the theater before. I was looking forward to seeing it. And then it got me thinking even more that it's a very slippery slope to try and do. While financially successful, the prequels were not popular with the fan base. And I know it seems really odd to say, how can movies make this kind of money but not be popular with the fan base? I think it's popular in terms of revenue generation, but when people said, were you satisfied with them? No. We had people that would keep going and seeing it, going, something. Is this going to be any better? And I think on one hand, there is, and I'm trying to make jokes about this here, this is a really legitimate concern. This is an iconic film franchise. You could make an argument that this is the film franchise out there. The whole world knows about Star Wars. The whole world is going to be watching. God forbid that comes out. It sucks. Can you imagine what the backlash is going to be? Can you imagine what happens if they look back and they say, you know what? Phantom Menace wasn't that bad after all in hindsight compared to this thing. Can you imagine the pressure it's going to be on Disney going, wow, we spent $4 billion for this, and we've got all these fans that are furious with us and we're flooded with horrible emails saying, you know, Lucas should never have sold the franchise and killed the franchise. And there's a part of me that says, maybe by not putting out the 3D conversions, they're being slick from a marketing standpoint. They're saying, we're not going to give you a taste of the thing that you weren't too happy with. We're going to deprive you of Star Wars and the big screen altogether. That way, maybe when this comes out, it's going to be fresh and it's going to be different. And you're not going to be coming off from seeing these films going, wow, I'm watching them, but I was disappointed. I'm really disappointed, and I'm ready for you to disappoint me. It's almost like a wiping of the slate saying, we're not going to show you those things. We're not going to put them fresh in your memory. Give us a chance. We're going to go in a bold new direction, but at the same time, it's still going to be the Star Wars you know and love, and George Lucas himself has approved of what we're doing. So that's my take on it. I think as any director, it's tough. You've got to have someone that knows what they're doing to take over this, but you've got to have some serious guts because, number one, he's basically put the target straight on his back. Anybody who doesn't like the new... let's be honest. He can get away with the new Star Trek film being bad and people saying, okay, you got it right last time, but maybe you overstepped this time. Didn't work for me. Let's see what you do next time. If this new one does not work, he is going to have the wrath of millions, if not billions of people, squarely on it. And it takes, you know, it takes someone with some serious guts to say, you know what, I'm going to do it, and I am the one that's going to pull it off.
Yeah, it's definitely a tremendous amount of pressure.
Yeah, so anything else you guys want to cover tonight, since we covered so many great things?
Nothing that I can think of.
Well, I think we definitely covered the good things. You want to make sure that we give a shout out. We're going to be doing a segment, as I said, on KISW FM on VJ Shade Morning Experience, where we are going to talk about the upcoming Dead Space 3 Aliens Colonial Marines, which I know Justin and I think you two are just chomping at the bit to get your hooks in that one. And of course, we're going to take a look at Crisis 3, which is available on in beta right now. People can sign up and do the beta for that, so I highly recommend that you do that. And we will also be having some reviews going up this week for Warm Bodies. We have an interview with the author of the book it was based on, and I will have my review for the latest Sylvester Stallone Master Thespian opus, Bullet to the Head. Those will be appearing on Friday, the 1st of February. Up until then, thank you so much for listening. We had kind of a freestyle show tonight, and we'll be back at the end of February with our latest one. And do check us out on our social networks, Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. And until next time, thank you for tuning in, and you have a great one.